This is the AgriTalk podcast brought to you by Syngenta, delivering better food for a better world through outstanding crop solutions. The Farm Journal College Roadshow is in West Lafayette, Indiana, the home of the Boilermakers, Purdue University. Hey, boiler up and get ready to wrap up another week of AgriTalk.
From the studios of Farm Journal Broadcast, this is AgriTalk, agriculture's national talk show since 1994. Here's your host, Chip Flory.
Hey, good morning and thank you for joining us again today. Welcome to AgriTalk and the campus of Purdue University. We have got a lot to cover on today's show, but first we've got to thank DeKalb Asgrow. Thanks to them for making it possible for us to bring you coverage from the Farm Journal College Roadshow. Okay, we got a plan to get this done. Coming up in the next segment, we're going to talk with the developers and the maintenance guys of the Ag Economy Barometer. That's Jim Mintert, extension economist, and Michael Langemeyer, professor of in the Department of Ag Economics right here at Purdue University. And later in the show, we will talk with Jason Henderson, Associate Dean and Director of Purdue Extension. Jason has been on AgriTalk with me before. Looking forward to talking with him again today about what's happening at the College of Agriculture, at a college that's celebrating 150 years of education. Okay, you guys, Davis Michelson and I drove from Northeast Iowa to Northeast Indiana on Wednesday. It was hard to believe the difference in the progress pace along the way. There was basically nothing done along I-380 in Iowa. There was some done along I-80 in Iowa and Illinois, with more done the further east we drove. But by the time we got into Indiana, wow, there has been a lot of corn and soybeans harvested in the northern part of Indiana, and they were at it big time again yesterday afternoon on the drive down here to Purdue University. All right, let's turn it over to Betsy Gibbons, get an update on the news. What's going on, Betsy?
Hey, not much, Chip. I wish I was where you were, though. How's the weather over there?
You really? Really? Because it's a little cold and it's a little windy, and but it's a beautiful campus. Love being down here.
But to an Iowan, that's not that bad, right? When you look at the winters? Nah.
No. Yeah, nah. I mean, we'll handle it. We'll boil her up and make it through.
All right, I like that. Let's get started on the news. We may finally be seeing some movement in the trade war with China. Now, the South China Morning Post reporting President Trump and China's president have tentatively agreed to meet on the sidelines of the G20 leader summit. Now, that's scheduled for Buenos Aires next month. The initial date is set for November 29th. That's the day before the summit formally gets underway. Now, the vice premier, who is one of the Chinese president's top economic aides, told state media Beijing and Washington, quote, are contacting each other at present. Now, neither the White House nor China's foreign ministry have released details about their leaders' schedules for that summit. And the U.S. has stopped imports of pork from Poland for now. It follows an outbreak of African swine fever in that country. Reuters reporting USDA is reviewing Poland's export protocols. USDA also working with Customs and Border Protection to increase screenings of passenger bags coming in from Poland. This all designed to ensure that restricted products are not being brought into the country. Now, of course, there's no sign of African swine fever here in the U.S., but American hog farmers
Thank
are getting
gosh.
Hit. What? Yeah, thank gosh is right.
I said, thank God. Yeah.
That's the last thing we need here. But American hog farmers are still getting hit with ongoing trade wars with China. Tariffs on U.S. pork have climbed as high as 70%. And Chip, if you add in Mexico, I think what? That's about 90 total? It's got to be.
Yeah. It's absolutely incredible what the hog guys are dealing with right now. We've always talked about the tariffs just, and the focus always goes immediately to soybeans, but I'm telling you, pork has been right at the tip of the spear on this the whole time through, Betsy. And we need.
Chip, you're cutting out. All right, Chip, I don't know if I can hear you, so I'm going to keep on going with the news here. Now, when it comes back to the hog story, Wall Street Journal article reports meat processors in China are widening their supplier base. It's to guard against shortages as U.S. prices soar and the country deals with its own outbreak of African swine fever. Now, Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue looking for an aid package for farmers hit hard in the southeast by recent hurricanes. Perdue saying, quote, current safety net programs we have for farms in the Farm Bill are not going to be adequate for this kind of devastation. That's the end quote. The package would be similar to the $2.4 billion in agricultural disaster aid that Congress funded following the 2017 hurricanes. Georgia's agriculture commissioner estimates the state suffered up to $3 billion in agricultural losses from the storm. Florida's ag commissioner says at least 3 million, that's M as in million, acres of timber were affected and other commodities suffered severe damage. Now, according to Reuters, the EPA says it can, in fact, allow sales of higher ethanol blends of gasoline year-round without Congress. This comes after President Trump announced last week he was directing the EPA to lift the summertime ban on sales of so-called E15 to help farmers suffering from slumping commodity prices. And for Congress to get back into the game, or excuse me, for the EPA to allow sales of ethanol blends, that's what the ethanol industry is saying. They've had the power to do that overall. But when it comes to that, of course, the oil industry is pushing back on this potential sales of E15 widening year-round in the renewable fuel standard. But how much work does the E15 entail? Chip, are you back with me?
You bet. I'm back.
All right, so I want to hear your thoughts on this, okay?
Yeah.
So when we're talking about E15, this mm-hmm. is all great news to farmers, to the ethanol industry, but what about infrastructure and some of these tanks that aren't quite applied yet?
That is one of the big holdups in the whole process, Betsy, no question about it. We've talked about it a few times on AgriTalk, that getting the infrastructure geared up and able to handle those higher blends of ethanol out there, that's one of the big issues. And you know, the other thing is, and there is another roadblock that I think is coming. Now, the good news is everybody in the ethanol industry is gearing up for it, and that's going to be court cases. Big Oil is going to come after this decision, and they are going to drag it through the court system as long as they possibly can. Now, there are some ways to adjust for that. Even though EPA says that, hey, you know what, we don't need a change in the RFS or any of the laws that are existing out there right now to bring E15 year round, it might be easier if Congress would just take the thing head on and get some legislation pushed through that gives that gives a 15% blend the waiver that it needs against the RVP. So you go back to the 1990s with the Clean Air Act, the 10% ethanol blend has got that RVP waiver. If they would do the same thing for E15, then all of a sudden you are dealing with law rather than EPA's interpretation of what the law could be. So even though they say that we don't need a change in the laws, that would be the easiest way to keep it out of the court system.
Do you think it could go back to Congress, like originally planned, when Congress decided how many the blends?
Yeah, I think it could. And the reason that I say that is because Congressman Colin Peterson from Minnesota said that might be the easiest way to get things done and something that they might have to do.
Interesting.
Betsy, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we're live on the campus of Purdue University. It's the Farm Journal College Roadshow. Coming up next, we're going to talk the farm economy with economists Jim Mintert and Michael Langemeyer right here on AgriTalk. RFDTV's Farm Her takes a look at how women across the country are impacting agriculture. Syngenta has been a main sponsor since the start of the show, and we're joined now by Communications Manager Wendell Calhoun from Syngenta. Wendell, why is this initiative important to Syngenta?
Well, Chip, Margie, a photographer from Iowa, she started the Farm Her movement more than 3 years ago to change the perception of farming as a male-dominated industry. So from the beginning, Margie's mission to update the image of agriculture, it really resonated with Syngenta because we recognize how valuable women are in agriculture all across America, and we're committed to diversity in the industry. And we wanted to continue to impress upon the diversity of careers and the contributions that are highlighted on the show.
Yeah, that is very cool. It's a very worthwhile effort there. Thank you, Wendell. You can see Farm Her on RFD TV on Fridays at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, and you can learn more by visiting SyngentaThrive.com/FarmHer.
Acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, nobody scrutinizes performance like you do. And acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, nobody delivers consistent performance like Asgrow, the highest yielding soybean seed in the U.S., offering 100% exclusive genetics and innovation to keep you farming out in front. Ask your dealer how much further you can grow when Asgrow leads the way. Performance may vary. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
A history of success. It's more than a goal. It's your legacy. That's why you can place your confidence in the consistently superior yields of DeKalb and grow boldly. Backed by 100% exclusive genetics and leading innovations to help your crops stand stronger and your bins fill faster. Ask your dealer how DeKalb can help you ensure a future of performance. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Performance may vary.
Control your destiny in a challenging dairy industry at Farm Journal Media's Milk Business Conference, November 5th through the 7th in Las Vegas. Walk away with a competitive edge from insights on market trends and innovative ideas to optimize your dairy business. Register today to network with fellow dairy owners at milkbusinessconference.com.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, Farmer Focused Podcast. It's all about production agriculture. Farming the Countryside is available wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. It's brought to you by Nutrien Ag Solutions, the world's largest provider of crop inputs and services.
And welcome to the Farm Journal College Roadshow, and welcome back to AgriTalk. We are in West Lafayette, Indiana, on the campus of Purdue University. Thank you so much to DeKalb Asgrow for making it possible for us to be here at Purdue. And speaking of DeKalb Asgrow, let's go ahead and roll this industry spotlight. Joining me now is Kirsten Thomas Garriott. She is a DeKalb Asgrow technical agronomist. Kirsten, thanks for being here. All right, very good. Kirsten, now what territory do you cover here in Indiana?
I cover 21 counties in central Indiana, right across the middle of the state, that I-70, I-74 corridor.
It's kind of a sweet spot this year, wasn't it?
It is. We have seen tremendous yield out of our corn. Soybean performance also really good. Kind of reflect on the year. 2018 crop is baked, but now is the time, while it's fresh in our minds, to start planning for 2019.
Yep.
Think about what worked for you, maybe some things we could have done better, so we can use that information to make better decisions going forward.
Yeah, you never want to quit scouting on this crop, do you?
Correct.
Yeah, stay out there. So what are some of the things that farmers should be looking for right now when they're out in the field and harvesting those crops?
I would encourage farmers to remember just how much data they're collecting on the farm. When we think of data, we hear about data all the time. It's a big buzzword in the media. Data is more than just what comes off your yield monitor. Yep. You're collecting planting dates. You have soil tests. You have a herbicide program that you used this year. You know what rate you used and the timing. And now you can assess how that performed. Synthesize all that information together. Capitalize on the people around you, your seed reps, your fertilizer guys. Use their industry knowledge and your data to make better decisions going forward.
Well, and use people like you to understand that data that's coming in.
Yep, that's exactly why we're here.
Yeah. Kirsten, it was good to talk with you. Thank you.
Thanks, Chip.
All right, that is Kirsten Thomas-Garriott. She is a DeKalb Asgrow technical agronomist. Okay, let's talk to farm economy. We've got Jim Mintert and Michael Langemeyer with us. They are co-authors of the Ag Economy Barometer, working on another one right now. Jim's also extension economist here. Michael is a professor in the Department of Economics. And Jim, you probably hold a class or two as well, don't you?
I do. I teach commodity futures.
Commodity futures. You know, at Iowa State many, many moons ago, that was Ag Econ 495. And I think that that long ago, back in the mid-80s, I think they introduced you to the futures trading a lot later in the program than what you do now. When do the kids start to get involved? Kids. When do the students start to get involved in the futures and options class?
The most of my students are juniors and some seniors. I have a few sophomores, but mostly juniors.
Yeah. So when they leave Purdue after taking that class, what do you hope that they understand about futures and options and how to use it?
The first thing that I try to teach them is that you've got two components of risk. One's the futures price risk and the other's the basis risk. And using futures allows you to actually separate those two components and manage those two components of risk independently.
Right.
And in class recently, we just actually spent quite a bit of time learning about basis and, more correctly, how to forecast basis.
Okay. Very cool. Very cool. Michael, if you could, move that mic just a little bit closer to your mouth there so that we make sure to get you. There you go. That's looking good. Looking good. Let's talk about the barometer here. Michael, what we were just talking with Kirsten about data and collecting that data. You probably are working on the next one right now, aren't you?
We're collecting data this week, and we'll be doing some analysis over the next week or 10 days, and then actually report it on the first Tuesday of November.
Okay. And the barometer to date, you know, you think about the economy, it's a slow-moving machine out there, but there's been some choppiness in the barometer readings here recently, hasn't there?
It's been a wild times in agriculture, and the barometers reflected that. You know, we saw the first big dip in the barometer this summer took place on the July reading, which was really the first opportunity we had to talk to people following the big drop in commodity prices. And then we saw a little bit of recovery in August, but it took another nosedive here in September. I think it dropped 25 points in September relative to where it was in August. And so, you know, it's reflective of the downturn that we've seen in commodity prices and in turn the tightening in margins for most farm operations across the nation.
Yeah, so, Michael, when you see a reading like that and that kind of a dip, what kind of sirens does that set off for you?
Well, I think part of what's going on here is there's a lot of uncertainty right now, particularly with regard to trade policy. And I think anytime you have a lot of uncertainty, that's going to make the barometer move up and down a little bit more than it would otherwise. And so I think that's very important. But one of the things that we're seeing that are red flags, if you will, is we have questions that ask people about how does this year compare to last year. And people are not answering that very, very optimistic way. Okay. And so they really don't think that they're doing better this year compared to last year. Moreover, when you ask them whether they're going to be doing better a year from now, there's still quite a few people answer that either the same or a slightly worse. And so we're just not seeing the uptick in confidence that their financial position is going to improve. And that's both short-term and long-term. I've talked about the short term and the long term. We've got some signals where there's still some pessimism out there, if you will, along with some people that are optimistic. You always have a diversity of opinion. But we ask a question related to whether this is a good time to invest in machinery and buildings. And that question, this last month was at the lowest level it's been since we started asking that question. Specifically, there's fewer percent that think this is a good time to invest in machinery and buildings than there ever has been in the history of the survey. And also, when we ask people about their expectations with land values, it's a real mixed bag. There's still quite a few people out there that think there's still some chance for land values to decline in the next year and perhaps up to 5 years from now. And so I think those are just signals that the margins are tight and they expect them to remain tight for the near future.
Now, land values, if they are expected to go down, can that be kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy? Guys back away from the market?
Yes, it could. But another thing that's happening with land values is interest rates.
Yeah.
Interest rates have increased already. We've gained at least 50 basis points or a half percent in interest rates already, and with future Fed policy actions, we're probably going to see another 1 to 1.5%, perhaps even 2% increase in interest rates. That's going to affect the short-term interest rates more than the long-term interest rates, but nevertheless that'll have a depressing effect on land values.
Okay, is there anything in the barometer about how farmers are dealing with lending institutions, with bankers?
We don't ask questions specifically related to that, but we do ask questions related to their financial position now compared to last year and now compared to a year from now. And as I indicated, there's still a fairly substantial group of people that don't think their situation's going to improve.
Yeah. Jim, interpret that for us. If you've got the belief that your situation is not going to improve, what does that mean for the ag economy going forward? I mean, does the attitude have an impact on the economy?
Well, I think it has an attitude in terms of actions that people take, particularly with respect to investments. And, you know, Michael was talking about the farmland values. I'm looking at the chart, and we asked people for their farmland price expectations 12 months ahead. And what we saw the last 3 months was a significant rise in the percentage of people expecting lower farmland prices in the next 12 months. You know, prior to the trade issues and the big drop in commodity prices this summer, I think only about 15 to 20% of the people in our survey said they expected lower prices for farmland in the next 12 months. When prices dropped here this summer, these last 3 months, we've now seen that at about 30%. So that's, depending on which month you compare it to, an almost a doubling of the percentage of people that expect lower farmland values in the next 12 months. And that just tells you that people feel like their working capital is too tight. They can't afford to make those kind of bids. They don't want to make that kind of a long-term commitment. And that's probably going to be reflective of what we see take place in some of the auctions this winter.
Yeah, and Michael, doesn't that have to translate at some point into some lower average rental rates?
Yes, that's a very good question. When we were looking at rental rates earlier this year, all the way into late May, it looked like cash rents had stabilized and perhaps we're going to perhaps increased a little bit. The Purdue Land Value Survey, which surveys people typically in May and June, actually saw some slight increase in cash rents for 2018. But that was largely before the drop in soybean prices. With the drop in soybean prices, I think there's a lot more pressure, downward pressure for cash rents. And we've asked a question the last couple months, Jim, about that. And 63%, 65% approximately of the producers that we surveyed in the Ag Economy Barometer Survey indicate they expect cash rents to decline.
More with Jim and Michael when we come back to Purdue.
1,000 acres, carry the one.
These days, it's hard to make the math work for your soybean fields. The BASF Liberty Link system with Liberty Herbicide makes it easier. Start with a 2-plus bushel per acre yield advantage. Add in lower system input costs and more complete weed control, and you get an extra $33 or more profit potential per acre compared to Asgrow Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Grow smart with Liberty Link and BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
First-generation farmers are a special breed. Farm Journal business editor Annalisa Laca helps these ag unicorns tell their story on a new podcast, The First Years.
It may have been hard, but there's a lot of good things that came out of it. A lot of time we spent together and our kids, I think, were better for it.
Join me each week as I chat with first-generation farmers and ranchers who have what it takes, grit and determination, to start from nothing.
The First Years with Annalisa Laca is available where you access your favorite podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, and now the new AgriTalk app.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady joins us now. Brian, wrapping up another week, got a little bit of pressure on beans. What's going on there?
Well, we had the sharp pressure yesterday, so we're seeing some follow-through this morning. Concerns on the demand side, you know, this is typically when we see exports ramp up, and we had some cancellations this morning. China canceled 180,000 metric tons of U.S. beans, and then there was an optional origin sale of 120,000 metric tons to unknown that was also canceled. So that's putting some pressure on the market. Soybeans are challenging the uptrend from the September lows. Corn futures are about 2 cents lower, and they are also challenging the uptrend from the September lows. So pretty critical technical levels here as we close out the week.
You know, we started the week out so strong, Brian, and it felt like maybe we had this thing up and rolling. It's got to be a little concerning that these prices have rolled over again on us already.
Well, I think so. I still think the September lows are seasonal lows, you know, we had improved harvest weather this week after the weeks of rain and delays.
Yep.
And I think that put some pressure on the market. Technically, we broke down a little bit there. And then, like I said, the concerns on the export side with soybeans.
What's going on in the livestock trade?
Well, big pressure on hogs yesterday. Downside breakout on the daily charts. Bouncing back a little bit this morning. We'll see where that plays out, how it plays out to close out the week. But this is four Thursdays in a row where we've seen sharp price pressure. And then the Fridays following it have bounced back. But from a technical perspective, looks like it's rolling over. The cattle market is under pressure despite steady to firmer cash prices. So they're a little bit concerning there as well.
That's Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Stop by your John Deere dealer today to get the right part at the right price. No matter the age or color of your machine or your budget, that's the value of choice. Only at John Deere.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. I'm your host, Chip Flory, and welcome back to Purdue University. We are on the Farm Journal College Roadshow. Thanks so much to DeKalb Asgrove for making it possible to be here. Let's go ahead and make time for another industry spotlight. Joining me is Pat Hahn, DSM for DeKalb Asgrove. Pat, welcome to AgriTalk, and thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, Chip. I'm glad to be here.
All right. Very good. We were talking with Kristen earlier, and one of the things that she mentioned right out of the gate is that Indiana is seeing some pretty incredible yields, and it's not all over the state, but a lot of it's got to do with the genetics that are available out there.
Yeah, we're seeing some great yields. It's fun to be able to talk to farmers that are getting bushels. We have some areas that picked up a little more rain in some spots, so they're maybe off, you know, 10 or 15 off of some of the other big yields we're seeing, but for the most part, really big yields. And, you know, that's one of the things that with DeKalb, we're seeing that the package we put together across the board has been very consistent over the years. I've been doing this thing for a lot of years, and it's probably the best package from top to bottom that I've seen with DeKalb in a long time.
Isn't that fun?
Yeah, it's great. I know we just saw some recent data from our part of Indiana that from 102-day to 116-day across the board, DeKalb has a 9 bushel advantage over all of our competitors, and that makes my life a lot easier, and I know my dealers are really enjoying that advantage.
Absolutely. And you know, if you've made that much progress, there's more progress coming.
Yeah, there's some great things coming. We were able to test some new stuff this year. You know, it's been kind of last 3 or 4 years it's been a full season environment for corn. You know, we've got a great lineup in that area right now with obviously DKC 64, 34, and 35 kind of leading the way. But there's a lot of hybrids that stack up right around it. We got a new hybrid out, 6357, that's doing really well in comparison to 34. So we're pretty excited about what the future looks like, and along with new introductions from 105, 108, all the way up. So we're pretty excited about what we got.
Very cool. Very cool. Pat, thank you so much for having us down here. We appreciate it.
I appreciate it.
All right. That is Pat Hahn, DSM for DeKalb Asgrow. We are talking with Purdue ag economist Jim Mintert and Michael Langemeyer. We spent quite a bit of time there talking about what's going on with the ag barometer. And at the end of the last segment, Michael, we were finishing up and making some comments there, and I kind of cut you off. I want to make sure that you made all the points that you wanted to make there.
I wanted to talk a little bit more about cash rents. From the Ag Economy Barometer, about 65% of the people surveyed the last 2 months think that cash rents are going to come down.
Yep.
That's a big change from earlier this year. And driving that is certainly corn and soybean prices, and particularly the drop in soybean prices. And I think you can relate cash rents directly to corn prices, to keep it really simple. And if you're looking at corn prices at 350, you're going to see some weakness. If corn price stays at 350 or below, you're going to see some weakness in cash rents. I don't think there's any doubt about that. If corn price were to rebound and get up to the cash price, get up to 375 to 4, there wouldn't be much pressure. In fact, there'd be upward pressure on cash rents. Yeah. So I think we could relate this directly to corn price.
You know, Jim, the last 4 or 5 years, though, we've seen some price pressure out there, but then at the very end, an extra 15 to 25 bushels of corn on the yields, an extra 5 bushels of beans on the yield, and the landowners start turning those bushels into revenue, and it's kind of helped to float those land values, hasn't it?
Well, it's provided some support, and you know, I think if you think about it from a long-term perspective, I think sometimes people get a little carried away with how rapidly cash rents might adjust. I'll let Michael elaborate on this, but he did some pretty extensive research with one of his graduate students a couple of years ago, looking at the responsiveness of cash rents to changes in profitability. And it responds much more slowly than I think a lot of people might think. And Michael, you might elaborate on that. That was a good study.
Yeah, essentially a $100 change in net return to land, which is a large change,
obviously, but
it does change that fast.
Yep.
Only corresponds into a $10 change in cash rent in the next year. And so cash rents are sticky. They move much slower than net return to land because you've got negotiations that have to happen. And really, landlords are seeing, is this net return increase or decrease going to stay with us? And so it has to be two or three years in a row of really good returns for cash rents to start coming up rapidly. And on the downside, it takes 2 or 3 years of relatively low net returns to drive those cash rents down.
I'll bet the rents go up faster than they come down, though, don't they?
Actually, it's about the same.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. You know, all this uncertainty, Jim, that we've been talking about, that's had an impact on the barometer. It's having an impact on producers' attitudes going into the years ahead. And a lot of it comes down to these tariffs and the trade situations that we've got with China. Betsy Gibbon reported at the start of the show that it looks like maybe Trump and Xi are going to get together at the G20. But even if they get together and everything goes fine, it doesn't mean that these are going to be lifted and over in a short period of time.
There's two issues there. One is how rapidly they might be lifted. And then the second issue is there's already some evidence that we're maybe starting to disrupt some longer-term supply chain relationships.
Absolutely.
And I think for a lot of economists, that's probably what we worry about the most, is if you disrupt these supply chain relationships, whether it be on the soybean side or whether it be on the pork side or even on the beef side, once those supply chains have shifted, they're likely to remain in place.
Right.
And so, you know, there was a news story earlier today, I think, that maybe came from the Wall Street Journal, having some discussions with people in Spain and Argentina and talking about the fact that the Chinese had been reaching out to them and they were looking at making changes in their operation and expanding in an attempt to supply pork, in their case, to China. Those kinds of changes are the things that you worry about, because once that change takes place, there's a lot of inertia.
Yeah.
And so if we lose some of those markets because those supply chain relationships have changed, they're going to be tough to get back.
Yeah. And, you know, pork, obviously, but when it comes to China and U.S. pork, it was more of the growth potential that we saw there rather than actual exports. But now when we talk soybeans, obviously China is a hugely important market to U.S. soybean producers. How long do you think it takes before Brazil decides, you know what, China and the U.S. aren't getting along, and we're going to take advantage of it and really ramp up our bean production?
I think we're going to see a bump in acreage this fall coming out of South America. And, you know, this is – we've seen some of this before. If you go back in the 1970s and think about what our market share of worldwide soybean acreage was versus South America, we heavily dominated the world, very much so. And over the last 40 years, we've progressively lost market share. The industry's gotten bigger overall, so that's accommodated some of that. But this will exacerbate that. And there's ample opportunity to expand in South America. They've got land they could bring into production. Probably their biggest challenge is transportation.
Yep.
But those issues can be resolved. And I expect to see a bump in acreage down there this winter, in harvested acreage next, in 2019. And correspondingly, we're going to see a dip in soybean acreage in the U.S. You know, a lot of debate will be taking place over the course of the winter with corn and soybean prices, bumping up and down, trying to bid acres away from soybeans and into corn. But it would not be surprising to see soybean acreage drop 10% in the U.S.
Wow. That would help. I don't know if that's a cure, Michael, but taking 10% off our acres, longer term off our bean acres, that would help the corn or the bean market. But then you start to wonder about what it means for corn.
And the shifts would probably be regional.
Okay.
If you look at the Eastern Corn Belt, I think there would be less shifting out of soybeans than there would be in the Western Corn Belt and the Northern Plains. And so I think the shifts would be regional. But nevertheless, that would impact all of us. But I want to talk a little bit about the relative profitability of corn and soybeans.
Good.
And this has really changed after this drop in soybean prices from about 2013 to the late May of 2018, the soybeans, particularly in the Eastern Corn Belt, definitely had an advantage from a net return standpoint. Now that the soybean prices declined and corn prices haven't declined as much, it's more even.
Yes.
And so in the Eastern Corn Belt, it's not like corn has necessarily an advantage, but it's that the advantage that soybeans had has disappeared.
Gotcha.
And so in the Eastern Corn Belt, I expect us to move much more towards 50-50. Last year, Indiana planted more soybeans than corn. I would be shocked if that occurred in 2019. I think it'd be much closer to 50-50. But as you move to the Western Corn Belt, I think you're going to see more continuous corn.
More continuous corn out there. And, you know, really what this comes down to for the most part is where we use beans. But we are using a lot of beans in this country. I thought we bumped up against crush capacity 3 months ago. And what do? We just keep crushing more beans.
Yeah, but to elaborate on what Michael was talking about, when you think about those regional acreages, you can look at the basis levels in the Western Corn Belt for soybeans versus the Eastern Corn Belt. You know, we're more negative than average nationwide in terms of basis levels, but it's really been the most extreme in that Western Corn Belt region because so many of those soybeans were targeted towards that Chinese export market.
Real quick, talk about your basis tool.
Yeah, so I guess particularly for people in the Eastern Corn Belt, we have a new tool on our website, the Crop Basis Tool. So if you go to purdue.edu/commercialag, right there on the top menu bar is a Crop Basis Tool. We've got data for Indiana, obviously, but also Illinois, Michigan, and Ohio. And it's sorted by crop reporting district. But to use the tool, you just pick your county and we determine which crop reporting district you're in.
Gotcha.
We've got 14 years of data out there, so you can look at the history, look at the averages, compare this year to the averages, and use that as a way to forecast what's likely to happen.
Excellent. Get on there and use that. Jim, Michael, thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's Digging Deeper with the Mosaic Company, the show where two agronomy experts take your questions about crop nutrition. Here are your hosts, Kurt Woolfolk and Ross Bender, senior agronomists from the Mosaic Company.
Hi, this is Kurt.
And this is Ross. And today we're answering the questions you sent us on social media.
Here's one from a corn grower in Indiana. How can I be sure all my crops are getting the necessary micronutrients from the fertilizer I'm using?
Micronutrients are called micronutrients not because they have a micro impact on yield, but because they're needed in micro quantities. When each plant needs some, but not a lot, uniform distribution of those micronutrients becomes very important.
Through fusion technology, MicroEssentials combines four key nutrients into a single nutritional balanced granule for season-long fertility.
By delivering uniform distribution, MicroEssentials ensures balanced nutrition at the plant level, making it easier for every plant to reach its full potential.
Have any questions you want Kurt and Ross to tackle? Tweet to us at MicroEssentials on Twitter or send us a message on Facebook. And to learn more about smart crop nutrition, visit MicroEssentials.com.
Hi there. I'm an off-brand tractor battery. You can buy me online or at the auto parts store pretty cheap. But I'll warn you, I don't have much of a work ethic. Yeah. And when it's cold outside, I may not keep a charge. But don't worry. Before long, it'll be time to replace me anyway. Hopefully you're not planning anything important that day.
Off-brand batteries are not Strongbox batteries. Strongbox batteries are engineered by John Deere and last up to 8 times as long. Don't risk it with anything less.
It's time to get dirt rich with new Poncho Votivo 2.0 corn seed treatment. The increase in microbial activity in the soil helps get more nutrients to the plant, and you get an average 3.8 bushel per acre yield increase over the original Poncho Votivo, all with the trusted insect and nematode protection you're used to. So be dirt rich, because that's smart. Ask your seed dealer for the new Poncho Votivo 2.0 today. Grow smart with BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Welcome to No Man's Land, a new podcast from U.S. Farm Report host Tyne Morgan.
Bacon is the gateway for a lot of people who are vegetarian.
That has to sink into our listeners. Bacon is the gateway meat.
I invite you to join me each week as I shine a spotlight on powerful women in agriculture while empowering all women in agriculture, going where no man has gone before.
No Man's Land with Tyne Morgan is available where you access your favorite podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, and now the new AgriTalk app.
Growers face enough worries today. SDS and nematodes shouldn't be among them. Alevo seed treatment from BASF is the only product that offers effective protection against both SDS and nematodes throughout the critical growing period. Growers get amazing early season protection for stronger profit potential at harvest. So worry about weather. Don't worry about SDS or nematodes with Alevo. To find out more about Alevo and how to protect your soybeans, talk to your seed dealer or your BASF rep. Grow smart with BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Win against weeds with Corvus for end-of-season rewards.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody, and welcome to the campus of Purdue University here in West Lafayette, Indiana. This is the fourth of the college roadshows that we've done. Started out at Texas Tech, University of Missouri, Iowa State University, and now here at Purdue. Joining me now is Jason Henderson. Jason is the Associate Dean of the College of Ag and also the Director of Purdue Extension, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
that's what I thought. Thanks for having us here.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you here and being on our campus.
You know, like I said, this is the fourth one that I've done.
Yeah.
I've had an opportunity to sit and talk with the dean of the College of Ag, and Jason, everybody is very excited about the demand for the students that are coming out of the College of Ag. This is for, it's even with the ag economy in a bit of a downturn, the demand for talented people still very strong.
Oh, it is tremendously strong. We have our largest enrollment since 1982, and we've been growing just steadily over the last decade. And every year, we still 96% of our students have jobs by the time they graduate. Wow. And within 6 months. And it's just our job fairs continue to grow. In fact, that we used to have it in our union, but it got to the point now our union is too small that we have to go into our co-rec facility with all the gyms that we have there and shut that down for our college fair just for agriculture. And so this is just a tremendous interest in the type of students that we produce in agriculture here at Purdue University.
Okay, now that's an opportunity, but it's also a challenge because at the College of Ag level, you've got to be working with companies out there and getting a better understanding of what they need from the talent that is coming out of Purdue.
Oh, we do. And we spend a lot of time with that. And we have a lot of businesses come in and talk to us and give us, you know, the first question is how well are our students prepared, and what do we need to do better and get them prepared for the 21st century and the jobs of the future and all of that. And a lot of the things that we're doing is really, I mean, one of the big things is can they use data. The innovations that are coming in there, can they think entrepreneurially and be creative of in there? Because we see demographic shifts and demand is changing, and so how do we keep in tune with that? And at the same time, how do we take this big data that we're collecting on the tractors and all the different pieces of equipment, bring it together to manipulate it, manage it, and then come out to make decisions based upon it to drive costs down and to drive value?
You know, Jason, that right there, I mean, you're talking about one of the major concerns of farmers when it comes to precision ag is you can have all the data in the world, but if you don't know what to do with it, it doesn't do you any good.
It doesn't. I mean, you can take these geographic pictures and you can get beautiful pictures of what's going on in the soil and the land and nutrient management, but you've got to take it to the next step. But how can you make better decisions off it to drive profitability?
Okay, so what are you doing here at Purdue to help that student? I mean, every ag college now, the diversity compared to 30 years ago when I was at Iowa State, the diversity has just exploded in the ag college. What do you do to meet the needs of those students?
Yeah. So what we do a lot is we've upped our recruiting perspectives and understanding of various different avenues. We tap 4-H here in the college. That's a good influx of students there, and FFA, and go out and interact with them as well. But it's also looking at that more of our students today are coming in from an urban setting.
Yeah.
And so going out there and doing different aspects of it. And so for us, it's going into urban communities like Gary, Indiana, that for a while, it was our fastest growing 4-H program. And now we're started a little small urban farm to teach them about agriculture and how their food is produced. And then now students are coming here to Purdue, to the College of Agriculture, because they saw that interest and figured out that, you know, agriculture might be in my future. It might not be on a corn soybean farm, but there are plenty of opportunities in agriculture for them.
Well, and for them to realize that, I mean, it doesn't dawn on them when they step onto the campus of Purdue. It's the outreach. It's the extension, right?
It's the extension. It's reaching out with them. It's talking about the opportunities of the college and this industry, which is immense. And for a lot of them, it's you know, opportunities for themselves, but it's also globally and worldwide. You think about agriculture and the footprints that we've had in many different places across the globe of how we've made a difference in strengthening their economies and their prosperity, which means it opens up markets for us.
Yes.
And brings us opportunities here. And
absolutely.
So all of that and those types of things, it's an exciting time to be in agriculture, time to be at Purdue.
It is. You know, and all of this, we talk about the outreach and the demand for the students and everything, but you got to have the faculty and the staff behind it to pull all this off and make it work.
Yep. No, you do. And it's been it's amazing. It's one of those things in agriculture and being here at the university, it's a big competition between colleges on getting the world-class faculty that you need to deliver a world-class education for our students. And but the faculty are great doing different aspects of it. And I think the unique part of being at the land grant is the innovations that they have through their research.
Yeah.
And they demonstrate on our farms that we have spread across the state. But then taking it through extension and working with it, and okay, how do we bring this to reality for farmers, of bringing them on the farms, of this is what you could potentially do in the future. We have to scale it up. We have to start businesses, which we're doing here at Purdue, of commercializing faculty innovations. And so that's been really good.
And
new opportunities.
And it's been going on for quite some time here at Purdue. I'm looking across at one of the buildings, and it says 150 years of giant leaps at Purdue University. I mean, celebrating 150 years is pretty impressive.
It is. This is our 150th anniversary, and a lot of big things happening here. It's, you know, obviously celebrating our giant leaps, because that's really back to Neil Armstrong and the first man that stepped on the moon and all that. But when you look at what we're looking at, we're talking about health. We're talking about sustainability. We're talking about artificial intelligence and big data and all of that. And all of these things have agriculture in one way or another tied to them and working with it. And so a lot of the initiatives that we're doing, we're celebrating across the state. But we're thinking big and bringing people to campus to have those big thoughts, because the last decade was about feeding the world, and we're going to have more challenges going forward, but it also more opportunities. So we got to think big and take that next giant leap for our next 150 years.
That's a strong message right there, Jason.
Yeah, it's an opportunity here, and just excited to be at Purdue, and moving this forward. Great
Very
opportunities.
Cool. Jason, thank you so much for staying here. And I know it's cold and it's cloudy and it's even starting to rain, but yeah, we're boiling up and making it through.
Oh, yeah. Boiler up, hammer down, and all hail Purdue.
All right. Good stuff. Thank you, Jason. That is Jason Henderson, Associate Dean of the College of Ag and the Director of Purdue Extension. Thanks for listening. Thanks to DeKalb Asgrove for making our coverage possible. Come back this afternoon. Davis Michelson and I will talk with Wally Tyner and Brady Brewer from Purdue University. Have a great day, everybody. This is AgriTalk.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success, like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
Prepare for the future of ag technology at Farm Journal Media's Ag Tech Expo, December 3rd through the 5th in Indianapolis. Whether you're a novice or a tech-savvy early adapter, Ag Tech is your go-to source for the latest in the industry. Customize your event experience and gain a competitive edge with more than 25 educational breakout sessions focused on precision ag, using data, machinery and iron, and sustainable technology. Grower and retailer registrations only $99. Sign up today at www.farmjournalagtechexpo.com.
Thanks to Syngenta for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. For more news on Syngenta and the trends driving the industry, head to syngentathrive.com.